Let's freaking go. The big question, should you criticize Jay Johnson, Kim Mulkey, Brian Kelly? I'm going to give you the God's honest truth here in just a moment, but let me first start off by saying this LSU baseball weekend could not have gone any better. Also, will they be able to make a run towards Omaha? Also, what about this recruiting weekend for LSU football? That's all coming up today. Let's go! So, Jay Johnson was under heavy criticism when the LSU pitching staff made a bold move. They started their normal Friday night starter in Cade Anderson, and then they brought in the best Saturday night starter in all of college baseball, might be the best player on LSU's team, Anthony Ianson, in relief in a pretty unprecedented move, which shocked quite a few LSU fans. So this brought up an interesting question and a huge debate that happened on Friday. And it is a question that I get a lot because I do this, right? I criticize coaches, not only at LSU, but everywhere. Criticize players, criticize programs, teams, and so on. Is it okay? Because Jay Johnson was roasted for this. And I, first off, will talk about the decision of actually doing this in a moment, but it is fine, whoever you are, to criticize anybody in sports, anybody, as long as you do it in a respectful manner. It's okay if you do it intensely, as long as you don't get personal, okay? I always hear this, well, Jay Johnson has won a national championship. I think he knows more about baseball than you do. Insert Coach X for every single one of those arguments. You could see it all the time in any other sport. But the truth is, these are sports, okay? It is fine for you to criticize someone who has a higher level of expertise in something as you do. Once again, as long as you don't get personal. All right, or you don't go overboard. Now, the truth is, I don't like being critical, in particular of LSU coaches. It's not something that I enjoy to do. I prefer to tell you that they make the right decision every single time, okay? But the truth is, criticism is good. I hear this all the time from fans. You shouldn't criticize anyone because it shows that you have a disjointed fan base, when the opposite of that is actually true. It shows that you don't have a bunch of yes men that are always saying yes to every last little thing your program does or your team does. You don't want that. You really don't. In fact, you want not only fans, you want media, you want entertainers, if you will, to hold your teams accountable. You just do. Okay. Jay Johnson gets paid a lot of money to coach his team, and he understands the standard. If anyone understands the standard, it's him. He talks about it quite a bit. So it's okay for you to do that when it comes to Brian Kelly. It's okay if you do that when it comes to any LSU coach. And then you can also acknowledge that they know more than you do, and there is a reason behind what they do. Okay? Now, I am more comfortable doing this when it comes to criticizing Brian Kelly because I know a lot of football coaches. I've been doing football commentary for a long time. I would like to think that I have a pretty decent level of football knowledge. It's what this whole channel is built around. So I feel a little bit more comfortable doing that, especially considering BK makes the money that he does. But the truth is, you don't need to be an expert in something to criticize it. I also think when you are critical of someone, you need specificity as to why you disagree with that person's decision. All right. And then also, if you want to get down into the meta, you can get into, well, look, I don't agree with the decision, but it turned out to be the right decision, right? The decision itself isn't bearing on its outcome, right? Those are two different things. All right. I got that a lot. I got that a lot. Well, why are you criticizing this person? Whatever. Now, this honestly was one of the most genius coaching moves I have ever seen, that Jay Johnson decided to do what he decided to do for multiple reasons. Number one, Texas A&M needed to win that game. We did not need to win the Friday night game. We just did not need it. But it would have been nice to win the Friday night game, and we did. So why not treat that game like it's actually the championship game? Because that Friday night win locked in our national seed. There was many that thought, because of our RPI being outside that top eight, that we weren't a lock for a national seed. All we needed to do was win one game to lock in that national seed. And that was Texas A&M's College World Series, basically, because they needed to win to have a shot to make the field. Now, they might still make the field tomorrow. I don't know. But then the second thing is that we weren't for sure going to win that game. So if we weren't going to win that game, Anthony Ianson was not guaranteed to pitch until the actual regional start. Now, I don't know about you. I am not sure if I wanted Anthony Ianson to get zero work when he's beginning weekly work all season long. I would have wanted him to pitch some. So even though it was in relief, not his normal start, even if we were getting blown out, I would have preferred Anthony Ianson to come into that game and get some innings. Remember, the SEC tournament this year was a single elimination tournament. And then we get into the most important thing. Ianson not pitching hurt our chances of beating Ole Miss. Now, it ended up not being the reason why we lost to Ole Miss, because we couldn't swing the bats. We'll talk about that coming up. But I didn't give a damn if we beat Ole Miss. We had our national seed locked up, and we didn't have to play an extra game. We're able to get back from Hoover, get rested up for the actual baseball that counts coming up. So you can even look at it like, yes, SEC fans travel to Hoover. We had a lot of PHLers in Hoover. Really cool stuff. Yes, it would have been nice to win another record-setting SEC baseball championship But it's okay that we didn't, because we're a program that's built bigger than Hoover. So the truth is, losing that game could have been a blessing in disguise. Who's to say in game three, Monster Milam turns his ankle? So let that settle in. The only thing that matters for me when it comes to Jay Johnson is that, number one, that we do win College World Series. That is the standard. But there's so much randomness that goes into you winning a College World Series. Okay? The big thing, though, the ultimate judge of you as a coach, for me, do you get a national seed? Were you one of the eight best teams in college baseball? The eight best teams in college baseball aren't the eight best teams that go to Omaha. The eight best teams are the ones that get national seeds. It is the hardest thing to do in the nation's hardest conference. Jay Johnson delivered. That is a sign of a good coach. Winning the College World Series, not really a sign if you're a good coach or not. It's just not. A lot of coaches have won College World Series. There's a lot of randomness that goes into it. Getting a national seed is all that matters. For me, when it comes to judging a coach. Ultimately, you are decided, though, by the College World Series. So, kudos to Jay Johnson. I think he honestly coached as well as he could have coached. Made that high-level move. I actually do strongly agree. I know many strongly disagreed, because Ianson, how's he going to react? How's his arm going to react in relief? Whatever. But the big thing are the bats. And before we get to your comments, hitting is very random. This was a neutral site, so it is a little bit different. But the bats were pathetic. Obviously, four runs in the first game, and then zero runs in the next. Three hits or whatever it was. I'm not worried about it. When the guys get back home, they're going to swing the bats just fine. Of course, it is weird when you got a guy as good as Josh Pearson having to come off the bench. So you're not always sure if you're putting your best foot forward, because there's so many good players on this team. But I do think the bats will come around when it matters the most in this next week. All right. So I think we'll be okay. I really do think so. You got a great 1-2 pitcher combo. Your guys like Newt and the rest of your relievers were good. And that's more important. Pitching is more important in the postseason than hitting. And I do think the hitting will come along. Okay. Let's go to AP. No runs in 14 innings. That is a big question mark. Can LSU generate some kind of offense? I don't know. I would like to think so. But we'll see what happens. We say hi to J-Red. If the coaches give back their paychecks, I'll quit criticizing. Yeah, I agree with that. The way I normally look at it, Jared, is this. If you make a seven-figure salary coaching something, you are worthy of criticism. If you make a seven-figure salary doing anything, that means you're probably a person of influence and a person of importance. You're probably going to be open for criticism, whether it's online criticism, bad Yelp reviews, if you're a restaurant owner, whatever the case may be. It is what it is. Let's go to Freddie. Monster Milam. Yeah, it has been a weird season for my favorite player on this team. I have his autograph painting right over here. You guys know I love short athletes. I was a short athlete. Milam did make a web gym underrated play this weekend. That was awesome. But you know, not swinging it as well as he did early in the season. But we know what happened last year, okay? In the postseason, he was our best bat. So I think we're going to get some more Monster Milo magic because that's just how LSU baseball operates, okay? Randall says, hey, look, Randall, you're not going to like me in a second. I think you're new because of that emblem. The players are all paid now. Don't forget that. Yeah, they are paid. Let's go to Tony. The strikeout king, Jared Jones, needs to do better. Yeah, I mean, Bear Jones is the ultimate feast or famine player. Now, next thing. It is the best time of the year. I understand the best time of the year for most of us is week one when football season starts back up. But that's too much pressure. That's the sport, obviously, that we all really, really, really do care about. Not everybody here cares about college baseball. But I do think regional and super regional action is the best action. Why is that? Well, there's no better postseason. You get the home field way of doing things. Remember, postseasons in football and in basketball, men's basketball, are decided on neutral courts. The first rounds of baseball's postseason, you get a home field atmosphere. It's not neutered down. It doesn't feel corporate. And the games are so much closer. Y'all, these games are so stupid close. There's so much freaking pressure. It is a completely different sport, postseason baseball. Okay? So I am so excited for regional, super regional action. LSU, obviously, being what we are, makes it more interesting. But even the softball is great. So we are really excited. Whatever the draw looks like tomorrow, I don't really care because we got the super regional seed. It's the national seed. All right. So I am in a I'm in a good mood. I'm gonna watch the what do they call it? Squeeze play, the college baseball postseason red zone version of the sport. It's beautiful. It's absolutely positively beautiful. All right. Now I want to talk a little LSU football. The first thing is everybody is on campus now. Today was the sign-in day for the new freshmen and transfers, which is a really cool thing. We are less than 100 days before the season opening game. One guy that is very interesting to me that I continue to get messages about is Aiden Anding. It would be nice to have a true freshman corner, not named DJ Pickett, that can come in and help out. Aiden Anding has a lot of interesting background and traits that I look for from a corner. Great ball skills, a very extensive basketball background. Normally, if you have a basketball background as a recruit, it's you just dunk it on guys if you're a football player because, well, you're athletic as hell. But Anding was a very skilled basketball player, a sharp shooting three-point shooter. His ball skills are crazy for a defensive back. And he hasn't always been playing football. Came back to help Ruston win a state championship in his junior season. So I have grown on him quite a bit. and versus Tre'Davious Green, a guy who's older than him, played him in a state championship game and held his own, and they won the game. So I do think Aiden Anding is a name to look out for. I am really looking forward to it. And, of course, he will be rejoining his high school coach, Kyle Williams, who coaches a different position, but it's still pretty cool. That's just one name, though. There's plenty of names that joined the fray here today, signed in, all that good stuff. And we have a little video for you regarding that that's coming up right after a quick break.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. Are you a diehard LSU fan? And would you like to understand the complex game of football better? Well, sign up today for our PHL Patreon. This is his second touchdown, counter GY. You're pulling the guard. We dive deep on recruiting and the transfer portal at a level that you have never seen before. Film breakdowns from so many different angles. And my personal favorites, oh yeah, the analytics, baby. I like to get nerdy. We take a look at cutting-edge statistics that help all of us understand LSU football even better. And guess what? Every new sign-up gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail for free. But we got to save the best for last. Our private Discord community of LSU fans from around the globe. Sign up today. Patreon.com/LSU football and put your name on our wall of patrons. Special thanks to everybody who's on here. Let's freaking go.
Look, it's official now. Ain't no more rest.
There we go. Look at all the newbies. You'll love to see it. Man, there's Anding right there. Good stuff. Big shout out to AP with the super chat during the break. I appreciate you. You get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. You know, I go back to the 2027 recruiting, and this has just been something I have been fascinated in. You know, I dropped a Patreon deep dive study on this. You can go to patreon.com/LSU football to see it. By the way, we are still doing the Ja'Marr Chase jersey giveaway. That's coming up pretty soon. I wonder if Jared's going to win it. I have a good feeling Jared's going to win the draw. But all you got to do to win the Ja'Marr Chase autograph uniform that's currently sitting right over there is sign up for Patreon. But I released a deep dive on the 2027 quarterbacks. Their 2026 quarterback more than likely will be Bo Bentley. Many still believe he is going to commit to LSU. What's your opinion of Bo Bentley? We've already done a Patreon film study on him. I think he's very good. I do. Far from a polished prospect, though. really good mobility, fun high school offense, has some good zip on the ball. And, you know, I like recruiting quarterbacks that could play a different position if you needed him to. It's a good sign of athleticism. But we'll see. Many feel he could go to Oklahoma. I would lean at this juncture 55-45 LSU. It could just be my bias because I want him to go to LSU. It is what it is. But I released a 2027 quarterback film study. And that means these are quarterbacks that are rising high school juniors. And if you are a patron, you already know who I think the best quarterback in this class is. So there's four that are top 100 recruits that LSU will look at, three of which are from the state of Louisiana. One is the younger brother of Garrett Nussmeier, Colton Nussmeier. The other is the five-star can't-miss prospect in Elijah Haven. Both are big dudes, 6'3". Haven, an elite runner. Colton has mobility as well. Left-hander. And then you have two Louisiana quarterbacks that are fringe top 100 recruits. Peyton Houston and the young man from, why am I drawing a blank? Malachi Ziegler. Either way. God, what is the town's name? I just pulled it up, but I closed the window. This is just a personal thing now. Whatever the case may be, I think Peyton Houston is the best quarterback now. Right now. That's not what we care about, though. Who is going to be the best college quarterback? Peyton Houston is the smallest of these three, of these four. By far the smallest. But at this juncture, I think he is the best at playing quarterback. The best prospect, when you factor in size, speed, all that stuff, is probably Elijah Haven. The services probably do have it, and I do think Elijah Haven is indeed very good. But Peyton Houston is one of the best high school quarterbacks I have ever seen. Now, there is a difference in being a high school quarterback and an actual college quarterback. But on Patreon, you will see why I think Peyton Houston is the best quarterback right now. So check it out. Okay. Now, it's a good question from Freddie and LA Mom. What about Colin Hurley? I think Colin Hurley has grown, literally and figuratively. The thing that's so interesting about Colin Hurley is the age. It's something I think about quite a bit. He's one of the youngest LSU football players ever. And at a position like quarterback, which takes the longest to mature and become good at, that is very important to keep in mind. It is so hard to grow at this position because it is such a mental processing position. Your brain doesn't stop developing until you're 25 years of age. That's why you see so many of the older quarterbacks dominate in college football. They don't become more athletic. I mean, yeah, sure, another year in the weight program. But where it really changes for you is your smarts, your wherewithal, your maturity, all those things. And Colin Hurley, as you guys heard in our interview, we did a whole film study with him. He was a mature guy. But he had that very crazy car accident. And nothing like that gives you a jolt of confidence. I'll be honest. Anytime something like that happens, whether you get hurt, or you have like a small fender bender. I actually had one myself recently. I backed into a gas pump. I was backing in to a gas slot, nicked the back of my car. Had to get like a little fix to it. I was like, you know what? Why am I even getting, I didn't even need to get gas. I was actually going in there to get something to eat. A little piece of beef jerky. That was exactly what I was doing. And for some reason, that just motivated me. I was like, why am I doing this? I didn't need to go out to go get this snack. I could have stayed inside and grinded another film study out, or I could have made this video or that video. So Colin Hurley gets this jolt, and he gets a second chance at it. Anytime you get in a crazy accident, you're just always happy that you're able to not only be alive, but be able to walk, especially if you were given a top 1% level of athleticism. So, really excited about Colin, and really excited about this next Venmo coming in hot. Julie, thank you so much, Julie, a patron, for your generosity. I appreciate it. So, Julie shared, along with someone in Garrett Nussmeyer's orbit, also shared this recently, this Todd McShay deep dive on Garrett Nussmeyer. It's in our Discord if you want to check it out. I do think, as far as Garrett Nussmeyer's growth, one thing to keep in mind, and this is very, very, very important when it comes to his NFL draft prospects, is that he threw the ball a lot. He had a lot of dropbacks. And something happens when you have a lot of dropbacks when it comes to media evaluation of a player. So if you have more dropbacks, guess what? That means you have more chances to put elite throws on film. And based on elite throws alone, especially in the intermediate, nobody in this draft class, which is what Todd McShay does, he's not looking at it from a college perspective, he's looking at this from an NFL perspective. Garrett's going to have the most throws just because he drops back the most, and he's also a very, very good player. But where games are actually won is on a down-to-down basis, which is why when you are evaluating a player, it's very important to not just look at highlight compilations. That makes high school evaluation really hard because it's hard to find full games. And you're really only evaluating kids off their huddle clips, which are neatly packaged together in camp settings. It is hard to sit down and watch full games. And as many of you know, Garrett Nussmeyer in a full game setting can leave a lot to be desired. But that's the case with any quarterbacks. So, you know, when I hear like the Todd McShays of the world, who knows way more about football than I do, way better at evaluating tape than I do. Todd actually does sit down and watch full games. That does make me more excited about a player. It does, whether it's Garrett or whoever else. Todd was also very fair in his criticisms of Garrett. All right. You, and I really do mean this, it is so important, though, if you're watching Draft Analyst X, if you can reach out and talk to that draft analyst, did you actually sit down and watch him for a full game? Did you actually chart a full game? Until you do that, you really don't know what a player is. You really don't. And it's actually changed the way I do film studies online. I used to do some film studies where I would grab a clip from this game, grab a clip from this game, grab a clip from this game, when that's not how football is played. It is a down-to-down basis. So, you know, when it comes to Garrett, that's why I think so many teams and so many people wrongly had him for a good bit of last year, especially during that Ole Miss game. They had him as the number one NFL draft quarterback in the cycle, for last year's cycle. They were saying, Garrett, you need to go into the NFL draft. And I, as the biggest Garrett defender, one of the biggest Garrett defenders you'll find, I've defended him tooth and nail, not only here, on other shows. I really ask people to pump the brakes on that. Not only from a personal level, I was like, well, I don't want him to go because I want him coming back and leading us to the playoff this year. But he also just wasn't ready. If you actually sat and watched full games, you could look at Garrett Nussmeier and say, that is not a first-round NFL draft quarterback. Now, after this next cycle, I believe he will be, because just another year of snaps, and I do think Garrett's going to have a big year. I do. Okay? But, you know, that's why it's so important. And it's easy on YouTube, and there's plenty of people that clip the full game, so you can watch it in only 12 minutes. But then there's also a downside of that, because they're not showing you every angle. And then you also only have the broadcast footage. So it's tough. It's really, really, really tough. Okay. Let's get to a few more comments here. H-Town Creole, Collins play will depend on the growth of the offensive line. Well, I do think Collins play will depend on Colin playing, because he's not going to play this next year unless he beats out Michael Van Buren, which I don't, it's going to be hard with Van Buren getting all these spring snaps. Let's go to Danny Girl. Always better to have Danny Girl in here. LSU softball aficionado, LSU center aficionado. Nobody knows the history of the LSU center position better than Danny. Okay. I start with accountability for Beth and Matt. That is true. You will not find a bigger Matt McMahon doubter in LSU media than me. I won't go down that rabbit hole tonight, though. Now, as far as Beth Tarina, so, you know, last Sunday we did our live stream, and I said I owed everyone an apology, and I apologize to you guys for sharing so much pro Beth Tarina stuff, okay? I still stand by the criticism and the praise I gave Beth Tarina last week, because it is tough to constantly have us in the top 10. But it does require a special, I don't know the best way to phrase this without getting too disrespectful. It does require a special skill to lose the way that they lost to Southeastern and to UL a few years ago. All right. UL, ULL, whatever they want to be identified as, whatever. I still can't get over Southeastern getting beat 22-1 by Nebraska in two games, total score. And then them dusting us. The game, the scores were close, but they really dominated. I mean, they let us get back into those games. Anyone that actually watched those games could tell you that. And then a few years ago, basically the same thing happened versus the Raging Cajuns. Normally, when teams are pulling off upsets, it's them making miracle web gym plays. And Southeastern made some good plays to win that game, but they also dropped basic pop flies, made basic base running mistakes, dropped balls at first base to get us, you know, back into those games. So, you know, I still think they should run it back with Betterina. I know it's a spit in the face to our softball loving people like Danny, Skipper, Sherry, Mike, and so on and so on. But, you know, with their contract being the way that it is, I understand people are worried about the portal and whatever, but Berzon going into the portal, I still think we should run it back. Okay. I Chance is a good question. I'll defend her because she's still a good coach. All right. Is she the Mark Richt of softball? I think it's fair. Well, I'll say this, Danny. If you're going to call Betterina the Mark Richt of softball, then we should fire her. Because that means our new coach will come in and win two natties back-to-back. And go to the playoff again in another. So, yeah. Fire. if she is Mark Richt. But, you know, it's probably Oklahoma's year again. Or Bree Ellis of Arkansas. But you tell me now that Arkansas is getting ready to lose to Ole Miss. Well, Danny, text me those names. Because I know Patty Gasso. I know Patrick Murphy, and I know Betterina. Those are the only three coaches I know. Okay. Let's go to Alex. There's only a handful of them when it comes to coaches better than Brian Kelly. That's a good point. I will say, in the SEC, the past couple of seasons, how many coaches can you say in the Southeastern Conference has done a better job than Brian Kelly? I think there's a handful. Obviously, Nick doesn't count because he's no longer there. Kirby, obvious answer, has been the best coach in the SEC and will probably continue to be the best coach in the SEC. Then you would probably have to say Lane Kiffin. You would probably have to say Josh Heupel. And that's about it. I mean, you can make a case. It wouldn't be a strong one, but you could make a case for a guy like Shane Beamer, who's at a lesser program, but has done really good stuff at South Carolina. But that's it. Only three coaches have been objectively, in my mind, better than BK. And Kirby is the only one that by far has done better than him. You know, you can make a case for BK over Heupel and BK over Lane as well. You can. So, I think Brian's done a good job overall. But there's been a lot of meat left on the bone as well. And I think, more than likely, if he could figure out this offensive line, this should be a good season for LSU. Literally every national analyst has LSU in the playoff. Okay. That is true. I did see that Stanford pitcher that shut us out. She got $1 million to go play at Texas Tech, and it paid off. Let's go to H-Town Creole. He says, coaching is overrated. Coach O coached one of the best teams in college football history. Was he better than the coaches he beat in 19? No. In particular, that year, he was not better than those coaches. No. All right. With that said, though, is Joe Burrow going to be our quarterback next year? And I'm not complaining about that because we have Garrett Nussmeier. He's good. Joe Burrow's gone on to do great things. It's crazy to think in college football you can get Joe Burrow every year. Even though with the way things are trending, you might have infinite years of college eligibility. All right. So this was brought up, a guy that I respect a lot, a guy that I have many mutual friends, a guy that I one day aspire to be. Congratulations to Josh Pate for getting married this weekend. I've never spoken directly to Josh. We do follow each other on Twitter. It's cool. And I know a lot of you are fans of his. And I myself am a fan of his. Disagree with a lot that he has to say. But one thing we are in agreement of is two things. Playoff expansion sucks. All this stuff that we're doing to change college football sucks. But he did say something today that I thought was interesting. Do you still feel the same way on college football Saturdays? And the answer to that for me is yes. All right. But also want to congratulate another friend of the show, Preston Guy, announced that he's having another kid. There you go, Preston. That's good. Congrats. Preston said, I did feel that this past year in the SEC championship game when Texas and Georgia played a meaningless game. And it was meaningless. It was very meaningless. It was a weird game where Georgia lost their starting quarterback and changed everything. And that was because of playoff expansion. So 2 points, both of them made really good points that you still feel the same way about college football Saturday. And it's changed because of the SEC championship game not mattering as it once did before, which was a do-or-die game to get into the playoff. So, yes, I am concerned about the future of college football. But when the chin straps are buckled and when it's time to actually play a game, I'm excited about it. Now, what is the one thing about the SEC championship game? Well, it's a neutral site game, which is why I'm so excited about LSU-Clemson. It's a game being played on college campuses, not in some rinky-dink state-of-the-art, even though that's a juxtaposition. Still, college football games should not be played in NFL stadiums. Outside of, course, Cincinnati, it just shouldn't be. I love that we're playing a home and home. I think Florida and Georgia missed the mark moving the game to Atlanta. But, you know, I just wish you guys could understand me giving my life to college football, making this what I do every single day as a occupation, if you will. It's hard when they're ripping this sport away from us. And notice, not a single NIL mention was made over this last 5 or so minutes of ranting. It's not been that. Is that part of it? Yeah, sure, but it's not been that. It's not. Let's go to Sam. He says, people are underrating the coaching job Brian Kelly did last year. We were a 6-6 or worse team, if we're being honest. So did we underrate Brian Kelly's season last year? The answer to that is it depends on your answer or your way of defining underrated. I'll be honest. I told you going into last year that the roster, to me, wasn't where it needed to be, especially on the defensive side of the football. I was very concerned. And we were still not good defensively. We were better than what we were the year before, but that's not saying much. So with the defense being the way that it was, and a first-year offensive play caller, and a first-year defensive coordinator at LSU, sure, you can look at it as us overachieving, if you will. And in the same token, you could look at it as, well, we won two games that did not give us really good post-game win probability. That's South Carolina and Ole Miss. So we were fortunate to win those games. And that's okay to say that. We still had a few blowout losses, which isn't what we want. I'm not a big fan of double-digit losses. We really only had one game where we were just skunked, but that was at home after a bye in a rivalry game. And as many of you know, we probably should have won the A&M game. It's Garrett Nussmeier. All right, it's a lot of Garrett Nussmeier, and a lot of that was on, honestly, you guys know I'm a big Blake Baker guy. A lot of it was on him. Those are the two big reasons, okay? But for me, the Florida game was an overall lack of talent because of injuries and so on and so on. And then, of course, we ended the season playing three not-so-great opponents. So, yeah, I think when you look at it that way, it was a fine coaching job. I wouldn't say it was stellar. I think based on what we saw from the team, the record perfectly displayed what we were as a team. Okay. Sam, thank you for your super. Let's go to AP. No way in heck should we have lost to Florida. Jan says we dominated time of possession against Florida. That is true. We did have long time of possessions. But there's a few things about time of possession. The first is we gave up a lot of explosive plays. So we had long time of possession because, number one, we missed our explosive plays outside of that Aaron Anderson touchdown. We didn't really hit a lot of explosives that were there, some of which were overthrows and so on and so on. We also had a few early fourth down conversions in that game. And then number two, they literally dominated the trenches. We could not protect them. And there's a lot of different reasons as to why we could not protect them. But yes, we should not have lost that game. At the same time, Florida could make the same case that they won the explosive play battle, whatever. Honestly, the penalty that took the CJ Daniels touchdown off the board, which was preventable, cost us big time. Okay. Big, big, big time. And this is partially a Joe Sloan thing, but this is a big thing about Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly preaches discipline. So, you know, for a while, and there's, once again, I know I talk about the Patreon all the time. Ask anybody that has access to our deep dives and all that, they'll tell you. Because as much as I love doing long live streams and stuff, it's, you really can't get too deep in detail because it gets boring, right? So on Patreon, you get charts, film, all that stuff. We were one of the best teams in all of college football last year when it comes to defensive penalties. One of the best teams in all of college football last year when it comes to special teams penalties. We were the worst team in the SEC and one of the worst teams in college football when it comes to offensive penalties. Now, I will say quite a few of the offensive penalties were early in the season and they weren't as impactful during the course of a game. So, for instance, when we were putting the game away versus UCLA, Mason Taylor had two random false start penalties back to back. We're up by 17, no impact. But still, overall, we had a lot of penalties, a record for an LSU offense, which is not good. Not good. All right, 61. And some of them were indeed backbreaking. And that one was probably the biggest. And when you factor in where it was in the game, it was big. It was big. AP says their quarterback had only one leg. That's true. And Lagway still lit us up. And he is a dual threat. He didn't have to his God-given mobility. And he is a very good runner. I wouldn't say he's elite, elite, elite. But very, very, very good runner. Some are concerning, or some are considering him as a potential Heisman candidate. Yeah, some of it was that, Pierce. But, you know, I don't. Because, you know, I spent so much time studying that game because it was such a bizarre game. They ran like 50 plays, we ran 90 plays. This is a defense, yet also a somewhat criticism of BK and why LSU made such drastic changes, all right? And why it's so important to keep – and, Jared, thank you for another super chat. We appreciate you, all right? This is why it's so important when it comes to compartmentalizing the players and the coaches, but also the personnel and the coaches, which is why you've seen all these very sharp college football analysts say you need a college football front office. All right. Now, you can get quite a few people to run your front office. We have more of a sharp guy with a personnel background in Austin Thomas. Oklahoma went and got them a football guy. They went and got Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl. He's not quite like a capologist, if you will, but he is a football mind to do your personnel. All right. So, Brian Kelly probably looked at last year's roster going into next last year. Our NIL wasn't as organized. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But every great coach would say, I think I can get more out of this team. I've seen what this guy did in practice. I see him every day. And coaches can be blind to an actual player's development, which is why you need someone else to determine, is this guy good enough to be an every down starter in the SEC? And I do think that Florida game in particular was a really good game for everyone to watch, because that was, to me, the least talented LSU football team I had seen fielded since the pre-Saban years. I really do believe it. And it's not that we didn't have great players out there. Hell, we had Garrett, Mason, Will. They were out there playing every single snap. But what that game showed wasn't an appreciation for those guys, because those guys went out there and not only played, but they played fine in that game. They were fine performers in that game. Same thing with Braden Swenson, who had a fine game. Your good players played okay in that game. It's just the players that aren't SEC caliber starters really had tough games in that game in particular. I mean, really tough games. And all Florida did was dominate those matchups. That's really what that game came down to. And it showed. You can go watch the game for yourself. So much of it was just that. Freddie says the DJ Lagway coming out party against us. Chance says Billy Napier might end up being a good hire. I am still on the fence. But this year is his year. This is his year. It is ironic that him and BK came in at the same time. They have been compared, which I think is stupid, but I can understand why people do it. And they're both under the most pressure to get to the playoff at anybody in the SEC, by far. All right, those two, it's not even close, honestly. Let's go to Tammy Dugas. Dugas, a famous LSU baseball last name. Welcome, Tammy. That's a great headshot, too. I love a good professional headshot. You know, my graph, this graphic in the, right here, my guy Noel Marcantel in New Orleans did that headshot. Love Noel the Soul. My college dorm mate, Noel the Soul, Marcantel. It was both goal. Defense did not hold up in that game. Now, they weren't just god-awful, but there's a reason why two of the defenders in that game are now on our team. And they didn't, neither one of them started that game. So here's what you're going to do. Oh, we're already past an hour. Time flies when you're having fun. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. We touch into different topics when we're past an hour. So for our new viewers, welcome. So excited about this NBA game tonight. Excited about this WNBA season as well. Also, you know, I do so much NFL stuff now. One guy I'm a little worried about going into this next year, and I don't know why, is Brian Thomas Jr. And it's because I just don't trust Trevor Lawrence. I do not trust him. I do a lot of Jaguar breakdowns. The film on Trevor was bad. Now, Trevor missed BTJ, and then BTJ made some rookie mistakes himself. But I just don't think Trevor's that good. So the thing that's very interesting, and we kind of lose sight of this with Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, I do think Ja'Marr Chase will end up having the best career out of any LSU wide receiver in the NFL. Obviously, it's going to be him versus Justin Jefferson. One thing, though, is of the elite LSU wide receivers, the ones that were truly, truly, truly All-American record setters, so many of them have had bad quarterback situations. So many of them. All right, DJ Chark, early in the season, made a Pro Bowl with the Jaguars with Gardner Minshew. Jarvis Landry, early career Baker Mayfield and Ryan Tannehill. And the list goes on and on. Odell had late stage Eli Manning. And now we have Malik and BTJ in quarterback hellholes. We are trusting Jackson Dart to save the day. Justin Jefferson's got a rookie quarterback. So, you know, that just goes to show you how freaking good these LSU wide receivers are. They still make Pro Bowls. And by the way, Brian Thomas Jr., he did eventually make the Pro Bowl, but him not getting the Pro Bowl over Jerry Jeudy last year was so much BS. I'm still pissed off about it. But dear God, Trevor Lawrence, please be something next year. Now, let's see. All right, Danny girl, I got your list here. Oh, I like that. Cool. Oh, I'm not gonna get down into this. That's a messy topic. Messy. So Danny asked my top 10 quarterbacks entering the 2025 season. All right. So I think it's going to be hard for Arch Manning to fail. I really do think so. There's so much money on that team. So many good players on that team. So, yes, I am still pro Arch Manning. Would I have him in my top 10, though? That's tough. I'm going to give you the names that are for sure in my top 10. Garrett is obviously for sure in my top 10. Lenore Sellers is for sure in my top 10. Sam Leavitt is for sure in my top 10. Now, and it happens every single year, all right? Or it happens in cycles. There's different points of the season where one quarterback becomes a sexy name. They're not like the can't-miss guy like Jaden or Caleb or whatever. It's seasonal. We talked about it. Garrett Nussmeier was the seasonal NFL draft quarterback in that fall region. And then when it was college football playoff time, it was Drew Allar. And then when he played in actual defense, he couldn't complete a single pass to a wide receiver. That is a real stat that happened. So it comes and goes, like a gas station. Or a Bonnie Blue video. I'm kidding. It really does. Like, there's always a new name. So I'm going to give you the name that the NFL draft wizards, the Nate Tices, the Corey Kinnons, the guys that do this full time. It's what they do. It's their job is to get the all 22, as hard as that is. It is hard to get college all 22, and tell you who they think that diamond in the rough is, all right? And this year, it is a guy by the name of Fernando Mendoza. That's the name. Some of you might not know who that is. He was Cal's quarterback who went to Indiana. Fernando Mendoza. That is the name. He's creeping into everybody's top 10 list. And he's in pretty much every NFL draft, top 5 QBs. Fernando Mendoza. Take that for what it's worth. He is unbelievably gifted. Dude has wheels, a big arm. He himself is a big dude. But it would not shock me if he Paxton Lynches the NFL draft next year. So there you go. Yes, Pierce, I did. It was a come and go joke off the gas station. I do not partake in the content. I do not. H-Town Creole says Malik Murphy will be a quarterback to watch out for. How about I do the opposite? Let's flip this around. Let's not talk about Malik Murphy. Let's talk about the quarterback who replaced Malik Murphy. Darian Mensah, quarterback from Tulane, who goes to Duke and gets paid a pretty hefty penny. All right. Randy, what's good?
Let's go to Danny's question.
Dante Moore at Oregon, John Mateer at Oklahoma. Haynes King and Diego Pavia, two names that come in. There we go. I am not sure if Diego Pavia is a top five SEC quarterback. I do think, and it could come back to bite me and it'll get clipped to the high heavens if for some reason we were to lose in Nashville, but I do think he is a little overrated. I'm not saying he's not good, but, you know, for me, could I say Diego Pavia is a top five SEC quarterback? Yeah, because he's more of a known quantity, but it would not shock me if he falls out of that list, of everybody's list. Not everybody agrees, Freddie. I do not think Arch is overrated. Randy in the chat. There we go. Let's see here. Cole disagrees. He's pretty good. Sam Levitt, Arizona State. I think Drew Allar is a little bit more NFL drafty than actually good at football-y, if that makes sense. You know, to me, the teams that will be ranked the highest going into the season, all going into the year with younger first-year starters, to me, is a storyline in college football. Because last year, the story was bring in your transfer year four, year five guy and have them lead you as far as they can lead you. That is not the case next year. Texas starting a year three guy. Oregon starting a year three-ish guy. He is year three, but Dante Moore's journey has been interesting. Georgia starting a year three-ish guy as well. Guys that have never been full-time starters. Same thing with Ty Simpson. So, LSU has a leg up. The unfortunate thing for LSU with Garrett is you're going up against the other guy with an elite top 10 team that actually has a ton of experience like Garrett, and it's Kate Klubnik. Okay. Danny has a list. So this is your order. Klubnik, Sellers, Arch, Mateer, Nuss, Lagway, Levitt, Beck, and Allar. Yeah, the Carson Beck stuff is interesting. You know, no quarterback has been under heavier scrutiny off the field than Carson Beck this past offseason. Whether it be TMZ tabloidish fumbling a Cavender
twin.
And then, of course, the NIL. Is he going to the draft? Is he doing this or whatever? I think it was hard for him to succeed because that was, to me, one of the weaker Georgia running back rooms, one of the weaker wide receivers room of the Kirby Smart era, not to mention no more Brock Bowers. So I can understand why Carson Beck struggled. There are some play calling questions. But even I overrated Carson Beck. So he's coming off this injury, and we'll see.
But I think
he is the perfect Miami quarterback. I do. I really, really, really do.
Everything about him screams Miami.
Let's see. Let's see here. Looking at a few different lists. I don't think so, H-Town. I think there's a few guys. Cole, I would prefer you to be doing. We need more drunk chatters. Our society has become more sober, and that's a good thing. But a few drunk chatters are fun. We've had my fair share over the years. So they got a documentary coming out of the one news story I don't quit thinking about is the submarine. I don't sit and watch a lot of Netflix, but they're coming out with a documentary of the submarine or the little tin. Where the billionaires went under and they crumpled. I think about that all the time. I think about them all the time. I think about the younger kid that was in there, teenager or whatever. And I just don't do water. I just do not do water. The sea, I don't want nothing to do with the sea. My biggest fear in life is drowning. Run me over with a train. Instead of having me be drowned. I've woken up from nightmares thinking I was drowning. And you want to go underwater in a Folgers cup? That's how you want to be spending billions of dollars? Send my ass to space with no oxygen before putting me 10 feet underwater. Chance, as many of you know, sharp guy, controlling with a PlayStation. I mean, what the hell? There is nothing to see. There's nothing for you to see down there. Take me to the fourth dimension that freaking Matthew McConaughey was in freaking Twilight movie, Interstellar. Then taking me 5 feet underwater. There is nothing for you to see under there. Nothing. It's not your business. It's not. That's the thing, Jared. They died so instantly, and their families have to wonder, why the hell did we think that that was a good idea? PlayStation controllers are for Grand Theft Auto. I think about the story all the time. All right, that'll do it for me. Thank you guys so much for making this one of our funnest streams of the past couple weeks. I really do mean it. As you can tell, I'm still a little congested getting over my sickness. So I appreciate you guys bearing with me. And you will get my full James Earl Jones voice hopefully in the next couple of days. Big thanks to our top super chatters of the evening, Sam, LA Mom, and of course the great Jared Addison. I really do appreciate you. And you cannot forget American Patriot, who puts his dog first. Always. It is Power Out LSU. Boom. Now, don't forget, we're giving out a Ja'Marr Chase autographed uniform pretty soon. I'm ready to get this thing out. I need you to message me on Twitter or Instagram. Don't do it on YouTube, because then people will be thinking, oh, what the hell is, why is the comment section doing this? Where is the best place, fast food restaurant, to get a chicken nugget? Tell me. Where is the best place to get a chicken nugget? Who has the best chicken nuggets? Not tenders. So Todd Graves, if you're watching, don't take it personal. I don't want you to start making nuggets. You do you. All right. But who has the best chicken nuggets? Send me a message on Twitter or Instagram. Let me know. And tonight, we're doing ribeyes. Let's call.